This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Bradnick come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal, joining you from our Lexington, Kentucky studio. Thank you to everyone listening tonight on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF is a nonprofit charity that provides much-needed assistance to approximately 60 former jockeys who have suffered permanently disabling on-track injuries. If you are able to help, please visit the website pdjf.org. Now, tonight, we are joined by a familiar face here in the Midwest. You've probably seen him sporting that sleek goatee in the winner's circle on multiple occasions. He's captured leading rider titles at Fairmount Park, Hoosier Park, Turfway Park. He's racked up 2,375 wins so far and over $26 million in earnings. Tommy Pompeo, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this evening. And I know you have a very busy day today, riding at Indiana, and busy morning working horses. But Tommy, I want to jump in here and ask you a very, very serious question that's been on my mind for a while. You rarely ever see jockeys with facial hair. You, however, like I said in our introduction, have that the sport, that sleek goatee. Why is that?
I don't know. Really, I don't. because I didn't used to wear one, and then all of a sudden, you know, I just wanted to change my appearance, so I started wearing a goatee. And a lot of people must take me for Tracy Hebert because he wears one, you know?
Really?
And I guess we kind of look alike. But.
Yeah? Well, it looks very good on you, Tommy. It looks very good on you. It's a trademark, I suppose, in a way. Like I said, you rarely see that with jockeys. I don't know if it's the wind resistance or something, but it's certainly not stopping you from getting to the wire in front. But, Tommy, the way we usually do these shows is we usually go back to the beginning, how it all began in your life, how you got started in the sport, how you decided to become a jockey. So let's go back to the very beginning and tell us how you first got your first taste of horse racing.
Well, I come from a long list of jockeys. My granddad, my dad, and I had two uncles that rode. And but when I was growing up, I was kind of scared of horses.
Really?
I mean, so, I mean, I got a late start. I didn't start until I was 23.
23? No kidding. No kidding. So you come from a long line of a horse racing family anyway. And where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in southern Illinois and Kentucky.
What part of southern Illinois? I'm from there as well.
Well, it's Sparta. My grandpa used to train on a farm there, and he shipped up to Fairmount Park and ran his horses. And then when my grandpa got sick, we moved to Kentucky because he was in the hospital there. And then we kind of got out of horse racing, but we lived right by Ellis Park. We live about 45 minutes from Ellis Park, so we went there for the summer.
Sure. Sure. Now, Tommy, what kind of a kid were you growing up? If you really didn't, you were kind of scared of horses, you said in the beginning. Were you an athlete growing up?
Yeah, I played football and wrestled, but I was getting too small for football. I mean, when I got into the higher grades, the kids were getting bigger and I wasn't, so I kind of got out of that, too.
How tall are you, Tommy?
I'm 5'2".
5'2". Yeah, small for a football player, I suppose.
Yeah.
How did wrestling help you with your future career? We have a lot of jockeys on this show who tell us the same thing, that they wrestled in high school, and it just seems to be such a popular thing for jockeys to have done in their past. How did that help you?
Well, I'm really not sure. I mean, it just helped me learn to keep my weight down, I guess. It kind of helped me, you know, because when, I mean, nowadays in school, they just wrestle at like every five, you know, like my son wrestled, and he wrestles at 135, but, you know, they, back when I was wrestling, I mean, we wrestled as small as we could, you know. I mean, if we 91, we wrestled at 91, but
wow.
But now they go like every five in groups in wrestling nowadays, I guess because, you know, trying to lose weight.
Right.
First kid, you know.
What was the lightest you wrestled at?
I think I wrestled at 190. I'm at about 90 pounds.
Wow. That's light. That's light. You're destined to be a jockey. So your family had a farm in Illinois, Southern Illinois. And I grew up actually, I was born in Mattoon. Long story, moved around all over the place. But I'm definitely familiar with the area there. And were you involved at all with the farm when you were a kid?
Well, I only went to like fourth grade there. So, I mean, we always wanted to go out and, you know, help clean stalls and drive tractors and stuff. So, yeah, we was always in the way, I guess. But
did that help you just seeing the amount of hard work that goes into a farm and racehorses? Did that help you realize that later on in your career?
Yeah, because, like, when I first started out at the racetrack, I started out as a groom and a halt walker. So I kind of worked my way up from the bottom to the being a jockey.
Oh, definitely.
But I know what all goes into it and how hard the work is back there. So I mean, when they lead one over, they expect to try to get all they can, you know, to help pay for all the help back there, you know. And you know, as I did it, I could see that, so that makes me try harder, you know, for smaller people trying to, you know, just get a check.
Exactly. Gotta pay the feed man, you know. But how did you, so you were kind of scared of horses, and what made you change your mind?
Well, when I got out of school, I just went to the racetrack and started, you know, because, I mean, I was just more, I don't know, I kind of got used to it after a while. I was scared walking them and stuff, but once I got around them, I seen that they weren't as bad as I thought they were.
Some can be, I'm sure, but what?
Yeah.
What kind of a kid were you in school? Just curious.
Oh, I was a class clown.
Class clown? Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy school at all, or were you just, you didn't really like it too much?
Oh, yeah, I kind of enjoyed school. I mean, I missed it more when I got out than I did when I was in it.
Grass is always greener, right?
Right.
So you graduated high school, and your brother was a groom at Ellis. Is that right?
Yeah. That's what, I mean, well, he was always older than me, so he started working at Ellis, and we'd go up and visit him all the time. So that's how I kind of stayed around the track.
Did he help you get a job as a groom at the racetrack?
No. He kind of, when I come back to Illinois, he stayed in Kentucky because he got him a welding job after school, and he was doing that for a while. And then I don't know why he quit that and went back to the horses, but but he had a pretty good job at welding. But when it's in your blood, it's in your blood, you know. You miss the racetrack when you try to do something else and you leave the racetrack, you always miss it.
It's very, very true, and it's definitely in your blood. That's for sure.
Right.
That's for sure. And so you started as a groom. How did you get that job?
Well, I just, my cousins, me and my cousins went up to, because they was working at Fairmont, and they took me up there and got me a job with a trainer. And so I did that for a couple of years, and I decided, you know, I wanted to start trying to ride. So I worked for AES and Price, and I asked him if he could take me out to his farm and teach me how to ride, and he did. So.
Wow, that's kind of a 360 turn of events there, to go from not really sure about horses, scared of them at times, to deciding you wanted to ride races. Wow, that's a big change of events. How did that come about? Just working around the horses?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, when I was smaller, you know, because my uncles, they just, you know, they throw me up on the teas and pony and just let him take off, and I'd fall off, you know. And that kind of made me a little leery of riding horses and stuff. But like I said, once I got to working around him, I figured me being on top of him, I can handle him a lot better than I could on the bottom.
That's very true. And definitely if someone threw me up on a teaser stallion and had that horse run off with me, I'd probably be scared too. For sure. So let's go back to your groom and your walking horses, and you start from the ground up and you see how much hard work goes into it. And how did you get comfortable working around the horses?
I don't know. I guess doing it every day, it just, you know, kind of grew on me. I guess the older I got, less fear of them I got, I guess, because I seen they wasn't that bad, you know. So. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And so
just working around them helped.
And then you decide you want to ride. And you said you went to trainer Eddie Essen Prize. Did I get that name correct?
Yes.
Went to his farm and he started teaching you how to ride.
Right.
So how was that process? Where did he start? What was the beginning of that?
Well, we just, you know, out there at the farm, we did a little bit of everything. I mean, me and my cousin, we galloped them all, and then, you know, we helped clean stalls or whatever had to be done around the farm. But, like I said, I had my cousin out there, so we kind of just get on them and kind of gallop them together, and I kind of learned that way, you know. And I stayed out there for a year, and then I galloped. And then he took me into the track, and I galloped there for about a year, or about a half a year or so. And then the county fairs came up, so I told him I was going to go ride the county fairs, and he seen that I started riding the county fairs, so he thought I was ready to start riding after the county fairs, so he put me on my first winner, and I win the first race at the Fair Mutual track, Fairmont Park.
Wow. That's pretty impressive, Tommy. Very impressive. First, I want to go back to, you said you started riding at the county fairs, and
yeah,
we've had a lot of Cajun jockeys on the show with talking about the bush tracks and you know, the hardships that go on there. How were the county fairs? Was it a tough place to ride? Was there a lot of schooling in the races, or
Because I had an uncle, he come back to ride, you know, he was riding because he was out for a little while, and then he got his weight back down and he started riding. And then when I started riding at the county fairs, he went to the county fairs, and oh yeah, there's a lot of schooling in there. I mean, there's no inquiries or taken down or anything like that, like they are in paramutual wagering. So, I mean, there's a little dirty riding, and you know, they school you pretty good in there. I mean, you learn lots of stuff in the county fairs.
I am sure, kind of a free for all situation. Do you remember ever having any kind of bad experiences there?
Not really. I mean, I never was, you know, put where I got dropped or anything, but I mean, they do put you in tight, and I mean, you just got to watch out for yourself out there. But I mean, I really didn't have real bad experiences, but I mean, I got schooled on a lot.
Yeah, got schooled. How about riding with your uncle? How was that?
It was good. He's competitive, you know, and he didn't want me to beat him. So, I mean, he was teaching me, you know, as he went. But, I mean, it was great riding with him.
Did he give you good advice along the way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he always, you know, he teach me what I was doing wrong. And, you know, he helped me a lot.
What something specifically that sticks out in your mind that he taught you back in those early days?
Well, you know, he kind of taught me, like, if I'm laying behind a horse, don't ask until they ask, you know, because you're using more horse trying to get to him. If he, you know, if you're setting good and he's just setting, just, you know, kind of set and wait for them to start asking. And then, you know, and I mean, that it is true, because you use a lot of horse if you're just trying to keep up with him. But if you're setting good, just set good, you know.
Patience, right, Tommy?
Yeah, patience.
So you ride your first parimutuel race and you win it. Do you remember that race? Do you remember the details of that race?
Yeah, somewhat, yeah.
Were you?
I mean, what was that?
Were you very nervous going into it or no, because you didn't already?
Yeah. Yeah, I was nervous, but I mean, I think the county fairs helped a lot with that, you know, so I mean, I had a little experience from the county fairs, so, I mean, that kind of helped with the nerves and stuff. But, I mean, it's a little different story when you're at the parimutuels. A lot bigger crowd.
Sure. Now, how long did you ride at the county fairs before you actually took out your apprentice license and started riding parimutuel
just
races?
Just that one season.
Just that one season. So that's, what, probably like a summer?
Yeah, it was like the summer of 96 when I started riding.
Okay.
Because I started riding the racetrack September. So.
And your first official victory came in, what was that, September 96?
Yeah.
Do you remember how far you won by?
I think I just went like by half a length.
So not bad.
Yeah.
I remember my first win, Tommy, and it was a photo, and I was so early on in my career, I had a hard time judging if I actually won the race or not. I galloped out, and I had to ask the outrider if I won. I wasn't sure. So you get that first victory there at Fairmount Park, and how was it from there? Did you just take off?
Well, at Fairmount Park, the season was about to end there, but what I did was went ahead and went five real quick, and that started my apprentice. And then all I had was Chicago, and Chicago was tough. And I only went up there, and I only went two races. So I should have just stopped after about four maybe and waited till next year, you know, when Fairmount opened, because I missed half of my bug because I didn't ride a whole bunch in Chicago because a lot of people didn't know me and stuff. But then when I come back to Fairmount, I was leading rider the next year.
Oh, wow.
So
explain that to our audience, Tommy, how the apprentice, how winning five races actually begins your apprenticeship. Explain that to the audience, that whole process.
Well, the way it works is it don't matter how many you ride. I mean, you can ride for a whole year. If you don't win five, then your bug don't start. So you get to keep the weight. And then after you win your fifth one, your apprentice starts, and you only get a year after your apprentice starts. And in some cases, like, I mean, a lot of places is you get a 10-pound bug, and after you win, I think it's, I'm not really sure, 10 or so, then you go to a 7-pound bug, and you got to win so many then. And then you go to a 5-pound bug. So most of the time, after you get your 5-pound bug, I think it's a year after that. But where I started in Fairmount, as soon as I win my fifth one, I was a 5-pound bug, and I only got a year after that. And then if you get hurt or you go back to school or whatever, if you start like when you're in school, then you can get an extension on your bug, which helps too. Like if you get hurt, then as long as you're out when you're hurt, then your bug will start back up when you start riding again. And then you get a year after that, you know.
Right.
So you get your bug for a year.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened to me. I had my apprenticeship going on, and then I got hurt, and then they extended it for the amount of time that I was out. And it's always a good idea to try to get as much experience before you actually win that fifth race, before time actually starts ticking, So you're as experienced as you possibly can be before that year starts.
Right.
So it's a very crucial time during a jockey's career, wouldn't you agree, as far as that apprenticeship, because you have that weight advantage. Do you think that makes a big difference, Tommy, that the weight off those horses?
My opinion is not really. I mean, I'd, like, if I was a trainer, I'd take the experience over the weight any day, you know. But I mean, there's a lot of them out there. Like, I know a trainer, Ricky Short, he loves the bug. They think that weight matters. You know, to some people it matters, to some it don't. But to me, I'd rather have a healthy jockey being a little over than have a jockey struggling to keep his weight down that's weak out there.
Jockey Tommy Pompel joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tommy, who were some of the riders who helped you early on in your career, giving you advice, besides your uncle and your family? Who were some of the riders in the room, maybe, who took you under their wing and helped you out?
Well, I mean, I rode with Dave Gall, which is a very good rider, and I learned a lot off of Dave. So, I mean, riding with him, I mean, and some of the stuff he says when he comes back, and, you know, he just taught me a lot. And I had another rider, which was Mike Gale. He was the rider for Eddie Essenprice, the guy that taught me how to gallop. Well, then me and him shared the stable, and he took me under his wing, and he taught me a lot. So I learned a lot off of Mike Gale. But just watching Dave ride helped me out a lot.
What kind of a rider was Dave?
Dave, he was a, I mean, he went like 8,000 races, I mean, but, I mean, he would take on a speed horse and take it way back and still win. I mean, he just, I don't know how he did it. He always brought everything off of it. And like he told me one time, he says, I said, Dave, I hardly ever see you use the whip. He says, son, most of the time I'm so far back here, I ain't got time to use the whip. And then when I get down the lane, I'm too busy trying to get him to run. I mean, he hardly ever used a whip and got run out of horses like you wouldn't believe. I've never seen anybody ride like him.
Wow. Wow. Would you consider yourself to follow after that as far as use of the whip?
Probably not. I mean, I kind of agree with him in that way, that sometimes the whip's overrated, because – I mean, sometimes you get, I mean, after you get after them a little bit, you know, if you get to hand riding them, I mean, you get more run out of them. But, I mean, some of the horses I ride, you kind of got to get after a little bit. I mean, it just, I don't know. He was just a good rider without the whip, you know?
Now, besides riding, which of course is the main focus when you're learning, starting out, but did he teach you anything as far as handling yourself, your how you come across to trainers and people in the business?
Well, I didn't really talk to him much about that, but I mean, I don't know who would, I'd have to say, kind of help me out like that. I mean, my wife kind of tells me, you know, presence is, or, you know, your appearance is the best way to, you know, for the trainers and stuff, you know, you got to make yourself look good out there and stuff. So she kind of keeps asking me about that, you know, it's all about appearance.
Exactly. And it's so important, as jockeys are considered self-employed contractors. So you basically have to go out, and your agent as well, but you have to go out and sell yourself as the best jockey, of course, for the job. Would you say you're naturally outgoing, Tommy?
Yeah. I'd say so, because, I mean, I'm out here every day. Even, you know, a lot of jocks take a day off, but my wife is assistant trainer, so I ride out here with her every day, and even if I don't get on a horse, they see me out here, so, you know, and then, so that helps me out a lot, because I'm seen out here every day, even when the track ain't open, I'm out here.
Wow. Can't forget you if they see you every day, right?
Right.
Now, you've mentioned your wife a couple of times, Tommy. She's an assistant trainer. How did you two meet?
Well, we met at Fairmont. She was a pony girl, and she ponied me a lot, and I guess I hit on her a lot. So, so that's how we met. And
was that early on in your career?
Yeah. I'd say around 99, 2000 when we got together, and we got married in 2001.
Very nice. Very nice. And she's an assistant trainer, so she knows the industry, and that has to be hard if someone doesn't, and the dedication required to the job. So she gets that you got to wake up early and go out there and work hard, I'm sure.
Right.
And who does she work for?
Well, here at Indiana, she assistant trains for Randy Klopp. And he's got a 30-horse stable here, and I ride pretty much well first call for him.
So she keeps busy as well with 30 head, for sure.
Yeah.
So, Tommy, you start out riding at Fairmount. You go to Chicago. You come back to Fairmount, and your bug's ticking. And eventually, you find your way to you make your way as a leading apprentice at Hoosier Park. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a buddy, a friend, saying you got to come to Hoosier Park, and instead of Chicago. So the next year, I went to Hoosier, and I was named on A opening day, and I had my bug, but it didn't last that long because I only had it for like maybe a month or two at Hoosier. And opening day, I was named on eight and win four of them.
Wow. Had that ever, was that the first time you had a multiple win day?
No, at Fairmont, when I was leading rider, I went one day I rode three and went all three. But I can't remember, it was around July, I can't remember what year, but I went 7 out of 9 races at Fairmont Park.
Wow.
Not when I had my bug. But.
That is so incredible. My gosh. You have to be on such a high, so confident to win 7 out of 9. That's just an astronomical number.
Yeah.
How does that affect your riding when you're that confident?
Don't affect it too much. You just go out there. Like that day, it's like I couldn't do nothing wrong, I went out there, and I think I rode the first two, win them. I missed the third, come out and win the next three. And then I think I ran out of third, come back, win one. And then I ran a fourth, I think, and then I win the last. So
That is incredible. That is just gives me chills. I've never had anything close to that. So that's an incredible feat to accomplish. Now, we will continue our visit with jockey Tommy Pompel after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Arnaldo Bocachica had a great weekend at Charlestown, highlighted by wins in the Coin Collector Stakes aboard Bullets Forever and the Confucius Say Stakes aboard In the Fairway. Bocachica consistently finished in the money on 41% of his mounts and finished the week with 5 wins, 2 seconds, and 4 third place finishes. Deshaun Parker had a massive week at Mountaineer as he was able to extend his lead in the jockey standings to 13 wins. Parker impressively won 46% and came in the money on 74% of his mounts. Parker finished the week leading North American wins with 16 and added 6 seconds and 4 third place finishes. Parker now sits just 10 wins shy of 5,000 career victories. Finally, the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Javier Castellano, had another great weekend, capped off with his second victory in the $1.25 million Charlestown Classic aboard Stanford. Castellano added another stakes win in the Robert Hilt Memorial aboard Dig Deep. Castellano's mounts led North America in total earnings with over $900,000 and finished the week with 5 wins, 5 seconds, and 4 third place finishes. Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, is now available in a digital version formatted for your ebook reader. Complete with live links to videos of key races featured in the text, a significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all of the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McMandigal here, joined tonight by jockey Tommy Pompel. Tommy, before we went to the break, we were discussing your early stages of your career, and you told me that after just a month or two left with your apprenticeship, you were the leading apprentice at Hoosier Park in 1997. Where did you go from there?
Well, after that, I rode a couple years at Fairmont and Ellis Park, and I think like in 2000, I met a trainer, Don Rice, and then I started going to Tampa, and I was riding everything for Don Rice. So I learned a lot at Tampa.
Tampa Bay Downs, that was where I first started riding, Tommy, and love it there, love the track there, love the people there. And how was riding at Tampa different than the Midwest?
Well, I mean, there was a lot more colony of jockeys from everywhere, like New York and, you know, Boston. And, I mean, they just come in from everywhere. So you had different styles of riding around you and, you know, made me a better rider, I think, because, you know, from riding at Fairmont, I mean, they're not the quality of riders you get, you know, coming in from everywhere. So, I mean, I think that helped me out a lot.
Would you say you had to adjust your riding style? Did you say you would have to be more aggressive? Or what would you say regarding your riding style down at Tampa?
At Tampa, yeah, you had to be a lot more aggressive. I mean, because, I mean, they were aggressive down there. I mean, like at Fairmont, I mean, I don't know. They just, like I said, they ain't the quality of riders at Fairmont that they are, I mean, at everywhere else, because I don't know how to explain it, but, I mean, like I said, they come from everywhere, and, I mean, there was good riders. I mean, a lot of good riders in the room. Like, in a small track like that, you only got, like, you know, maybe 20 riders, and you got maybe a handful that's real good, you know, and then you got some just learning, and I don't know how to explain it. I don't want to call them bad riders. They just don't get the experience because they've never really been nowhere else. So all they do is ride at Fairmont. So, but, I mean, back then, Fairmont had a lot more days, and they didn't really have to go nowhere else. I mean, they'd rather just stay at home.
Plus, not only the riders, coming in from everywhere. I always kind of called it like a melting pot of racetracks. You really do see people from everywhere, and you probably spread your name out there among folks from different tracks as far as trainers and owners as well, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah.
Now, you said you rode first call for trainer Don Rice. Did he teach you anything regarding your riding style?
Well, he kind of just liked my aggressiveness and how, like, you know, some people say, well, you move too early on that horse. And Don said, no, if you can't go with that horse then, because if you're, like, on the inside, you have a horse coming on the outside of you. I mean, I kind of like get there because if you got horses in front of you, too, they try to box you down in there. So I'd always, you know, if they come up to me, I'd let my horse out a little bit where I didn't get boxed in and stuff. And that's the way Don Rice liked the way I rode, because he said, if you can't go with them, then you ain't going to beat them anyway. So, I mean, and because I know my wife kind of got, because she was assistant trainer for Don Rice, too, at that time. And he says, well, Don, he's moving too early. And he says, no, if you can't move with him then, and I don't want him to get boxed in. And, you know, I mean, he kind of took up for me on that aspect. But he kind of liked the way I rode because I try not to get boxed in. And so, but.
Tell me, how would you describe your riding style? And that makes perfect sense, by the way. At least you get free running room anyway. You're not boxed in. But how would you describe your riding style?
Well, you know, a lot of people say I'm a good gate guy. I can get them out of the gate. And a lot of people tag me as a speed rider. But I don't have to be a speed rider. I mean, I'll ride the way they want me to. But a lot of them, since I get them out of the gate so good, I ride a lot of speed horses. So I'm more or less tagged as a speed rider. So.
How did you learn to do that? Have you ever ridden quarter horses?
Yeah, I rode some here last year, and I rode a couple in the county fairs. But the first year I went to Indiana, I started riding quarter horses. But you know, I just kind of sit chilly in there and try not to get too excited. A lot of people move around, I think, too much. I mean, you see them in the gate just moving around. Me, I try to sit still, and I think that kind of helps the horse break better because you're not moving around and you're ready for the break. But, I mean, you can't always sit still because, I mean, the horses won't stand still. But, I mean, I think the chillier I sit, the better I get out of the gate.
And horses are very intuitive as far as they can feel what you're feeling, and the quieter you are, the better response they will have. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree.
So you're good out of the gate, and you ride a lot of those speed horses, but you can ride those horses, those closing horses as well. Now, you're at Tampa Bay Downs, and like I said, I rode there as well and loved it there, and also loved the weather, of course, but nice to go to the beach on the off days, I suppose. How long did you ride at Tampa for?
My last year there was like 2006, 2007, because Indiana just got the slots, and I had a place at Tampa, and I had a place in Ocala, too, but when Indiana got the slots, we bought a place up here and tried to stay up here because my son was getting older, and he wanted to play sports. So we wanted to try to keep him in one school because I had him in like three different schools a year. But he always made honor roll. I mean, he did a very good job on that. But
wow.
Once he got older, we tried to, and Indiana got the slots, we tried to settle down and let him, you know, finish out school, trying to be in one place. So that's kind of what we did. But I did go back to Tampa this year, and I didn't do too bad. I mean, I did all right.
Tampa can be a tough spot. It seems to be a very, very popular spot these days. There are actually a large number of riders who go there, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's still tough as it was. I mean, it's getting tougher, I think, because, I mean, there's still the riders that come in there from all over and the trainers, and You know, when you first go down to Tampa, most of the time people bring their own riders, and then after a while they kind of, you start getting into other stables and stuff like that. But at the beginning, it's pretty tough because a lot of them go down there just for the weather and, you know, and just try to make as much money as they can. But if you don't go down there with a stable to ride, it's kind of hard to break in.
Definitely. And you bought a farm in Indiana. You said mostly because your son, you didn't want him to switch schools and he liked to play sports, honor roll, everything like that. How old is your son, Tommy?
He's 18 this year.
18, wow. Just one son?
I got one for my first marriage, and my wife's got a girl and two boys. But them are my stepdaughter and stepsons.
Keep you busy, I'm sure. Tommy, do you think your son will be a jockey?
No, he's kind of like me when I was growing up. He's not really into the horses. And like I said, he was wrestling at 135, you know, a couple years ago. So he's a little too heavy for that. I mean, he's my size, but he's a little thicker than me, you know. I mean,
yeah, that would be.
I mean, he's muscle.
Right. Yeah. Well, 18 at 135 would be tough to make weight as a bug, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Do you have a tough time with your weight at all, Tommy?
A little bit, you know. I mean, it just mainly if we ride every day, it's good. But like on them, like we race Tuesday, Wednesday, we got Thursday off. I can pretty much handle one day off, but it's like the Sunday and Monday. Like coming back today is going to be I have to hit the box a little bit.
No. I don't like thinking about those memories. I can tell you that, Tommy.
Right.
Don't like that. Well, I promise you, we won't hold you up much longer. You got to get there in the hot box and sweat it out. But do you work out at all besides riding?
No, because, like I said, I help my wife around the barn and stuff. And, you know, so I kind of – that helps. The more I keep busy, the less I have to hit the box. But if I don't do nothing, then – but, no, I don't work out or anything. I exercise plenty of horses.
That will keep you fit, for sure.
Yes.
For sure. How do you prepare for a race other than having to lose the weight and hit the hot box? How do you prepare for a race?
Well, I just read the form and, you know, try to see where the best spot for my horse is, you know. And I kind of see who I have to beat. And then I try to keep my eye on them the whole time, you know, because whether they're behind me or in front of me, I need to know where they're at. So I can try to keep with them once the running starts, which is turning for home. I try to keep a beat on him. And if that's the one I got to beat, then that's the one I'm trying for the most, you know. That's how I kind of prepare for it. Just look which one I got to beat, and I try to keep my eye on it. I don't always work out sometimes because he's nowhere to be found.
So, Tommy, do you prefer to have worked the horse in the morning maybe before the first time you ever ride them, or would you just watch replays and try to get a feel for them in the post parade?
It don't really matter to me, you know. If it's a first time starter, it's nice to get on them once and see how they're. You know, see how they are, see how green they are or whatever. But me, it don't really matter. I mean, I go out there and try on them. I don't really have to get the feel of them.
Now, how about your agent? Describe exactly what an agent does to our audience and tell us about your own agent.
An agent, he goes around and goes trainer to trainer and gets you mounts. And he tries to get, and if you got a couple in there, then he tries to get you the best, you know, he tries to keep you on the best one. Now, he just does a lot of your PR in for you and handles it in the office and just tries to keep everything straight for you.
And sometimes they gotta deal with headaches and dealing with. You could have more than one horse in a race, and they have to pick which horse. Obviously, talk with you, of course, as well. But there's certain situations where that can get a little tricky.
Right.
Now.
And if they also got to try to, you know, keep your mouth. You know, if a trainer thinks, you know, you got a bad ride or something. And, you got other agents. If you ride a horse good, then you got other agents over there trying to hustle your mount, and he's got to go over and try to keep it for you. So
exactly.
Yeah, he's got a lot of the headache.
got a lot of work to do. Absolutely, Tommy. Absolutely. Who's your own agent?
I got an agent I used to have several years back when I was leading rider at Hoosier and Ellis, when I rode at Ellis and, you know, went to Tampa. Me and him got hooked back up this year. His name's Mike Flasters.
Nice. Nice jockey. Tommy Pompel joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tommy, want to bring up a very monumental event in your memory, I'm sure. January 16th, 2010. You remember what that was? 2000th career win at Turfway Park?
Oh, yeah. 2000th career win at Turfway Park?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. How that had to be just a completely special moment to you.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you win like 2000 through, you know, 1500, 2000, it's very special for you.
Did you know you were going to win that race? Prior to, I mean, obviously you never really know, but did you have a good shot in that race?
Yeah, I think it's a horse I was riding for, I think, Bill Conley, and then somebody claimed it, and I ended up on it for them. And so I already knew the horse, and I figured I had a pretty good shot. But, I mean, when they tell you, you know, you only got, like, five more for your, you know, it seems like them are the hardest. If you don't know, you know, you got no pressure on you, but when they let you know you got one more win, I mean, it just seems like that one takes forever. So I don't know if it's pressure or what.
Got that monkey on your back, Tommy. It's not all that pressure. It's all on, you know. How do you?
Yeah.
That brings me to another question. How do you deal with good jockeys, as such as yourself, that they deal with pressure so well? When you get a leg up in a big stakes race. Whatever it might be, how do you deal with that?
I get out there, and if I start getting butterflies or whatever in my stomach, I'm like, man, relax. You're either gonna run good or you're gonna get beat. And I kind of try to talk myself out of it. You know, I'm out there because I can feel myself. Yeah, I mean, I still do it till today, and I've rode, you know, for almost 15, 16 years, and I mean, you get them butterflies, and you start like. Relax. He's either going. I mean, you know, because when you think you got a good shot, man, your nerves can screw it up more than anything. You know,
it's very, very true.
So you just kind of got to talk yourself out of being nervous.
Exactly. Do you find that when you actually sit on the back of the horse, it's a little bit better?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Once you get out there, like I said, I mean, going into it, I mean, I might get myself worked up too much, and then once I get out there, I start, you know, I start getting the feel of the horse, and he kind of calms me down, you know, and you just got confidence in your horse then.
Exactly. Tommy, future goals. What do you still have in mind that you still want to accomplish? And you've accomplished so much already, so I'm not sure what it might be, but what future goals do you have?
My future goals are just to stay healthy and, you know, keep riding as long as I can and, you know, just, don't put too much on me to, you know, don't put too much pressure on me to, you know, try to do too much.
Have you had any really bad injuries in the past?
I mean, I broke my wrist and I broke the collarbone, but other than that, you know, I've been pretty lucky.
That's good. That's good. Not too long of a list for sure. How old are you, Tommy? I didn't ask you before.
Me, 43.
43, still young, still so young. Come on now. That's so much left to accomplish. Tommy, what do you do for fun?
Well, I usually go we used to go floating a lot and, you know, just like spending time with the family, and it's pretty much what I do for fun, you know.
Sure.
Just have fun.
Sure, exactly, exactly. Anything down at Tampa you would do? Would you go to the beach, go out on the boat, anything like that?
Yeah, at Tampa, we used to go to the beach a lot because, I mean, and then we'd go to the parks. You know, when the kids were smaller, we'd go to the parks. We went to, you know, Disney World and stuff like that. But most of the time, we'd go to the beach because that don't cost too much, and the kids love the ocean.
Exactly. I love it. I love it down there. That was the greatest, to be there in the wintertime and it's warm. You go to the beach, it's just too much fun. And Tommy, we're almost out of time here, just a couple minutes left. We mentioned quarter horses earlier on in the conversation, and you said you've ridden some this year and you've ridden a few in the past. But I want to ask you, just because I find that fascinating, I've only ridden one quarter horse myself, just working the horse in the morning out of the gate. That was the biggest rush I've ever experienced. That was just an incredible feeling. But do you like riding quarter horses in the races?
Yeah, especially the one, you know, the fast ones. They're the funnest. I mean, when you leave there, and I mean, they just pick up speed as they go. I mean, them are the funnest ones to ride because they kind of, like, they're a little different from a thoroughbred. So you kind of got to be ready when they leave the gate because they kind of suck down and leave, you know. So if you're not ready for that, you lose the stirrup, I mean, quick. Because when I first started riding them, I mean, the first one I rode at the fair, that's what I did. I've never been on one before, and I left the gate. And when he went down, I kind of lost my arm. I ended up second. I rode him the whole way with no arm because he ain't really got, like in thoroughbreds, sometimes you got time to put your foot back in the stirrup, but not on a quarter horse. I mean, yeah, they're a little different to ride, and they are a rush.
It's funny you mentioned that, Tommy. Like I said, I only rode one out of the gate, and we broke out of the gate and just the biggest rush, but that's exactly what I did. I lost one of my irons. Actually, the safety keeper wasn't up. I should have checked it. I learned since then, of course. But the leather actually fell out of the saddle when we broke, so I had no iron left. It was on the ground, and that was not fun to ride this quarter horse with one iron. That was not fun at all. That's not a good feeling whatsoever. But Tommy, tell us maybe some of your favorite horses you've ridden in your career.
I got a few. One that my wife owns, I rode him in 2013, and he was a marathon horse, and his name is Barat. Well, it looks like Barat, but it's kind of pronounced Barra. And I went 7 out of 9 races on him one year, 2013.
Wow.
And I got a few that I rode for Don Rice, Guardian of the Gate, and Chef's Choice. I win some $75,000 stake races on them. Actually, I rode them both one day and win 2 stake races there at Tampa on them. And there was an Indiana bred here that I win quite a few races on, which was Mr. Mink. And them are just a few of the, I'd say, some of the better horses I've rode.
Wow. Borat. It's like the movie, but that's not how you pronounce it. How do you pronounce it again?
It's Barra.
Barra. Barra. Seven out of nine. Quite the accomplishment. What do you have going on today, Tommy? You're riding today at Indiana.
Yeah, I ride 5 today, so I got a pretty busy schedule. And
should we go to the windows?
I think I got a few good shots.
Nice, nice. Now, do you travel at all? Of course, we have Keelan going on here in Lexington. Do you have to travel a lot during the summer?
I try not to travel too much, but yes, I do go to Keelan, Churchill, where the meet runs. If Randy, you know, Klopp, a guy I ride for here, if, you know, some of the races ain't going here and he needs to run some, he will take them to Churchill. Or, you know, when Ellis starts, we went down to Ellis a couple times last year. And but I try not to travel that much. But But with our big horse, with the marathon races, we have to go over to Mountaineer and run in the mile and a half and stuff like that. Went up to Presque Isle and running that marathon series they got up there. They got a speedball series and a marathon series. So.
Oh, wow. Lots of traveling with that horse.
Yeah.
Now, Keelan and Churchill, of course, like I said, Keelan's going on right now. How is it to ship over to Keeneland and be there with those big crowds? And that has to be a rush just to experience that.
Oh, yeah, I love Keeneland. I mean, it's a beautiful track. And, I mean, I just love going there, you know, to ride because, I mean, it, like I said, it's just one of the most beautiful tracks I've been to.
Now, Keeneland, of course, just went to dirt. What's your opinion on Polytrack? Turfway, of course, you ride at. What's your opinion on that?
You know what? I like Polytrack. It just depends on, like, what Polytrack it is. Like, Turfway, it's a little different Polytrack. I don't know if they just, because of, Polytrack's more like a no-maintenance track, and you usually don't have a lot of kickback. But Turfway, for some reason, they got a lot of kickback. But, you know, I've been to Presque Isle, and I've been to Arlington, and I've been to Keeneland with the Polytrack, and you just don't hardly get no kickback. And, you know, a lot of horses, they either like it or they don't. And I have rode a whole lot that hasn't liked it, but I have rode some that, I mean, just will not run on it at all. And if they don't like it, they don't run on it. But they say it's kind of like if you got a good turf horse, they like the poly. And so, I mean, I've always done all right on the poly. I mean, I like it.
It's definitely different. Tommy, I hate to cut this short, but we are all out of time. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Good luck today, Tommy. And folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You will also find a full schedule for every show on the Horse Racing Radio Network on our website. We bring you something new almost every day of the week. Check it out. Horseracingradio.net. Sorry, tongue twisted. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.